Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
8:15, snow's gone, forget social media, no cold weather coming for the Super Bowl. If anything, temperatures could be a little bit above average, and all in all, almost Chamber of Commerce. Like, let's hope so for the Super Bowl week. Ronald Serpas joins us now, our friend, Professor of Practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, and head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, known consultant. He's been all over the place. How you doing, Chief?
I'm great, Tommy. How are you today?
Good. Did you get a chance to go out and make snow giants last week?
I did. It was so much. It was so amazing and fun to have snow here in New Orleans. It's, I think, happened maybe 4 or 5 times in my entire life.
I'm glad it's gone, though. It was fun, but I'm glad it's gone. Let's talk.
Well, we live here because we don't have to do with it every day.
Yeah, but actually, you know what? You did live in areas where it snowed in Nashville and Washington State. Compare and contrast, and you didn't come on to talk about this, but you know, our conversations can range. Talk about the response, if you will, to a state that's not really from a state that's not really prepared for this to what happened.
In Nashville, it'll snow 4 or 5 times a year like it did here this last week. It'll be a day or two of heavy snow, and then it'll kind of go away. In Olympia, it doesn't snow much, maybe once or twice a year, but it could drop 24 inches, 30 inches of snow in that event. And then when I would fly over the mountains to go visit our Spokane troopers in the city of Spokane, they'd have to clear the runway with bulldozers before we could land. So that's the differences in those folks. In that part of the country, live with snow piled up to 20 feet on the sides of the interstate as they clear passes over the mountains. It's a lot different than here.
And you know what's involved in the expense with budgeting and preparing for all of that. Really, can you fault the response from anybody with what happened last week?
No, I mean, it's just an issue that we do not have that type of equipment, the sand, the salt, the vehicles, the snow plows normally stationed around here. So they're going to take a couple minutes to get down here from another part of the state or use somebody on alone. But we did have some warning that it was coming. But, you know, Tommy, when Betsy hit in 1965, it was 40 years later before people were very concerned again, right? We live year after year of living through hurricanes. And then sometimes we got to take attention that they could be worse than we expect and they could be worse than planned.
I just think, like a contractor always says, we can do anything you want. We can get you ready for anything you want, but you got to have the money to do it, right? It all costs money. Let's talk about security preparations for the Super Bowl. How many had you been through or have you been through in your role as police superintendent, officer, et cetera?
Three. I was a sergeant when the Super Bowl came in the mid-80s. I was the chief of operations when the Super Bowl was here in 1997, which means I was the operations chief of the department. And then the Super Bowl was exactly 12 years ago this month when I was the superintendent of police. And you might recall we had the electricity blackout in the middle of the game. So I've been around quite a few of them and had visited many of them during my career.
When it comes to who's in charge of this, because I had a conversation with the guy that owns a barrier company, Archer Barrier Company, Meridian Defense Group, and I understand he's in the process of, in the business of selling and renting barriers. I get all of that, but he talked about a plan that he proposed to the city for Mardi Gras, et cetera. But first things first, when it comes to the Super Bowl, the NFL is pretty much in charge of everything, and they're at the head. Everything feeds through them. NFL security?
That wouldn't be my experience.
No?
Inside
okay.
the Superdome, it would clearly be a relationship between the city and the NFL, with the NFL laying out what it is they expect and need. That, to me, seems very normal and has happened before. Outside the immediate structure of the Superdome, that's the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana, and because it's a SEER 1 event, that means the federal government is sending an all-hands-on-deck approach, DHS, ATF, vehicles that can inspect other vehicles as they drive by, different types of techniques and strategies that can put into communication networks. So essentially, the city of New Orleans never abdicates its control of providing for leadership and direction on the Super Bowl planning, but you do work with other agencies quite closely.
I thought I saw Ann Kirkpatrick yesterday, maybe I misheard, saying that they put the wedge barriers in place at the request of the NFL, or do I have that wrong, or does the NFL suggest things and then the city goes along with it?
I would only think that because of the horrible tragedy on January 1st, there may be more of that kind of request or thinking or discussion, but don't really know the difference in what you thought you heard and what I think I might know it happened. So, you know, maybe that'll come clear over the next day or two.
Well, what do you think happened?
Oh, I think that everybody's very heightened as a course naturally because of the January 1st. But when we were doing the Super Bowl planning just a decade ago, there was no real discussion about Convention Center Boulevard, Decatur Street, Canal Street, Royal Street, Bourbon Street. Those were issues left to the city in cooperation with state and federal authorities. And the NFL is very secure-minded on its ball game inside of the Superdome.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back because, you know, I go back to the Sugar Bowl, which was immediately after the event, and I saw somebody with an ice chest, of all things, on the ramp, and I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm just telling you what I saw firsthand, selling, what do you call them, bootleg drinks, whatever you want to call it, unlicensed drinks on the ramp of the Superdome. And it just astounded me seeing that, and I'm not, you know, trying to focus on selling drinks without a license, but just the fact that they were able to get an ice chest on a ramp of the Superdome the night of the Sugar Bowl after this happened, when they knew they had explosive devices and ice chest, I just don't know how that was allowed to happen. But we'll talk more about that when we come back with Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent. At the time, I looked at it and kind of shook my head, like, you know, entrepreneurs and so forth. And I know Newell is strictly opposed to that, and rightfully.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
So I get that. But then I thought about the security aspect of it, and it's like the longer the event, the time has passed since then, it really has etched itself into my mind. 821 traffic now, WWL. 825 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with our friend Ronald Surpass, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent, been a street cop for how long, Chief?
It was 35 years.
35 years ago. He was there for the first Super Bowl in L.A. when Green... No, he wasn't. I'm just kidding. I was talking to Councilman Joe Geruso yesterday, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't remember exactly what I asked, but I asked him about security preparations and about who was in charge and who was running point, And I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not quoting directly, but I think he told me that he wasn't quite sure. Does that concern you as far as communication goes with the city or who's running point for security or who's in charge? Tell me about that when you were chief.
When I was chief, and again, I don't know what the current condition is, but when I was chief, we routinely had meetings of the planning team, and then we significantly brought in all players, both political, elected, and appointment at several points during the planning process, so everyone would be aware of what was going on. There were invitations sent out. If people came, they came. If they didn't, they didn't. But I remember one in particular. As we got within about a month of the Super Bowl, we had a massive meeting in the Superdome that probably had 50 people that we had invited, Mayor Landrieu, myself, the fire chief, and others, and every member of the council was there. I'm not exactly sure why that would be the case, if that's the case.
So let me get back to my, which again has grown exponentially in my mind since I saw it. As I go back and read about the ice chest and the Bourbon Street terrorist attack and so forth, and on the night of the Sugar Bowl, after walking past God knows how many armored vehicles and officers from so many different federal and state and parish jurisdictions, heavily armed, seeing somebody with an ice chest on a concourse of the Superdome just blew my mind and how that could happen. Thoughts on that? I would guess, I would hazard to say, that dog's not going to hunt with the NFL in the Super Bowl, first of all.
Yeah, and I don't think it should have hunted there. I mean, first off, I would tend to agree with Newell. When you have entrepreneurs, if you will, selling stuff like that, that's just the wrong way to do it. You don't know exactly what you're buying.
And I don't disagree with him at all on that. I'm just saying, in light of the Bourbon Street attack, that was the least of my concern when I saw the ice chest. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, and you got to remember this, you probably could not bring that ice chest into the dome, right? You wouldn't be able to get through security with the dome. So the dome has a security force. The NOPD and other agencies around us provide security and traffic direction around the dome during Saints games, other major events to include the Sugar Bowl. Candidly, if I was the chief, I'd be pretty wound up about that.
I saw it with my own eyes. Tim says he saw it too. I'm not making this up. It was there. So go ahead. Finish. I'm sorry.
Well, first off, it's illegal.
Yeah,
it's not legal to sell stuff like that. So whether you had the horrific tragedy of January 1 or the Sugar Bowl, it's still illegal to do it. I would be kind of very upset to ask questions like, we got all these police around here. How come nobody interrupted this? There's no excuse to say, well, we kind of let this happen because it's against the law and it's not a very safe look. And clearly, just 48 hours after the terrific event, no, that's a bad look. I would not have supported that.
I don't know if that was the only up ramp. Y'all can text me at 504-260-1870. It was Porter Street, the up ramp where I saw it. Tim, is that the one you saw or not? On Porter Street, yeah, right by the sign and the entrance. I don't know if they had them anywhere else or not, but man, to think that an ice chest could get through all of that security and finding out again about the explosive devices in the ice chest. Final thoughts, Chief, before we run out of time?
Yeah, for the Super Bowl, there'll be more stanchions of cement barriers further away from that door you were talking about, so it probably wouldn't get through there. But that doesn't excuse that it got through there on any Saints game either.
And to be clear,
it's illegal to do that stuff.
On the up-ramp, that big tubular up-ramp, you know what I'm talking
about.
Yeah, right as you make the turn and head down to Porter Street. And it was not one of these little lunch igloos or anything else. It was a full-size ice chest. So, thank you, Chief. No, appreciate your time.
Wrong.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again next week. All right, Ronald Surpass, Professor of Practice, Department of Criminal Justice. If you went to the Sugar Bowl and you saw any ice chests besides when I saw or Tim saw, I'd like to know at 504-260-1870. Speaking of the Bourbon Street terror attack, when we come back, we'll talk to Andy Copeland, CEO of the Greater New Orleans Foundation, about plans to spend the New Year's Day Tragedy Fund. We'll also talk about getting shirts to still support that fund if you want. Again, go a size up on those because I got mine yesterday, 8:30, time for WWL First News. 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. We talked about the shirts you can buy from the Saints and from the Pelicans to help the victims of the New Year's Day tragedy. One specifically goes to Southeast, the United Way Southeastern Louisiana. I don't have it in front of me. The other one goes to the Greater New Orleans Foundation. I'm sure Andy Copeland can straighten us out on that. Either way, both are for a good cause. The only thing I would suggest, you can still get them at NewOrleansSaints.com or Pelicans.com, is that you order a size up because mine came in and they might run a size small. Andy Copeland, CEO of Greater New Orleans Foundation. How you doing, sir? Good morning.
I'm doing great. Thank you, and good morning to you, Tommy.
Tell me about the New Year's Day Tragedy Fund and how much money you've raised. Tell me, the beginnings of it, Scott, and the whole story. Put it all in a context what we're about to talk about.
Yeah, so you know, obviously we all woke up on the morning of January 1st to the devastating news about the terrorist attack in our community. And so I reached out to Mayor Cantrell to do what other folks have done in similar situations, which is to see if we could raise money to support the victims and their families. And she, of course, endorsed it immediately. We launched a fund that morning, and we're now up about $2.7 million. Wow. And 100% of the revenues from this will go to the families of those who lost a loved one or to those other victims who were severely injured in the attacks on Bourbon Street on New Year's Day. And again, over 2,500 separate donations, leadership donations from Mrs. Benson and the NFL, from Ochsner Health, from Raising Cane's, from the Allstate Sugar Bowl, Zion Williamson, Cox Communications, Baptist Community Ministries, and again, thousands of individuals who just wanted to help these victims and their families.
Everybody, I think, wants to help and still should want to help. The snow kind of – did the snow hurt your effort at all, Andy? Because it kind of turned –
I don't know that the snow hurt our effort at all. I think I think that folks, when they hear a program like this, when they think back about how they felt that morning at that news, we just have a lot of folks who want to help. And in a situation like this, you may not be able to go, clean out the storm drain in front of your neighbor's house in preparation for a hurricane, but you can give money to a fund like ours where 100% of the dollars go to the victims. And again, I'm always amazed and thrilled by the generosity of folks in our community who rise to the occasion and say, I can do a little bit to help, and then they go do so.
So it's not over. I presume the fundraising effort continues, Andy?
It sure does. It sure does. On Sunday, we're going to be with the Louisiana Restaurant Association. They've been doing fundraisers for all of their restaurants, and they're going to be able to make a contribution to this. Last night, Emerald and a lot of the restaurateurs in town, Jewel of the South Restaurant and Bar, which is an award-winning cocktail bar in the French Quarter, has done a fundraiser for us. P.J. Morton did a concert at the Dew Drop Inn a couple weeks ago. And so people are continuing to do their part, and we're just so gratified to see the commitment of folks and just the generosity of them to try to do their little bit to help. And every dollar helps. And again, I hope that next week when the Super Bowl is here, and a bunch of their sponsors will think about what they can do to respond to that tragedy in our community. Besides showing up to the Super Bowl and making sure that we have a good event, I think that a number of them will likely see this fund as an opportunity to contribute.
I should have it in front of me, but I don't. Is it the Pelican shirts or the Saints shirts that go to the...
Mrs. Benson and the Saints are so generous. So the Saints shirts benefit the fund at the Greater New Orleans Foundation. And so we are just grateful. Those are some terrific shirts. I haven't gotten mine in the mail yet, so I'm waiting on it. I'm worried that I might have to order a larger size.
But you know
too,
what? That's good if you do. That's good if you do, because then what? Exactly. That's the first thing I thought of, Andy. I thought, you know what? Either I got to stop working out, or I ordered the wrong size shirt. I got a medium. Or, you know what? Why not order another one? And I got some for the staff, and I'll probably have to upsize them too. But it's good because it goes to a good organization. We'll talk about how that money is going to be spent and the Mass Survivors Fund when we return and who's running that. We're talking to Andy Copeland, CEO of the Greater New Orleans Foundation. You can still get your Saints Love NOLA shirt. It's a great-looking shirt at NewOrleansSaints.com. But, again, order a size up. I would. 851, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 856, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with Andy Copeland, CEO of the Greater New Orleans Foundation, talking about the Survivors Fund, the New Year's Day Tragedy Fund, and what they're going to do with the money. Tell me the process that's involved in deciding how this money gets distributed, Andy.
Sure. Yeah, so we've set up a steering committee to guide the development of the protocol, which really spells out how much money the different eligible victims or their families are able to receive. We've hired the Mass Violence Survivors Fund using money that our board raised separately. So none of the money that folks are donating to the Victims Fund is paying for the Mass Violence Survivors Fund. But Jeff Dion is their leader. He's unfortunately had to do this about 30 different times. So he's a national expert. And we held a meeting with victims and families and other members of the public on Monday evening at the Greater New Orleans Foundation to get feedback on that draft protocol, what parts of it that they liked, what parts they didn't like, making sure folks understood how they were going to be able to access the funds. And we will be publishing a final protocol on February 3rd. Applications will begin to be opened up on the 17th of February, and we'll be able to get preliminary distributions to families beginning as soon as they've got a completed application in that system in mid-February. We're actually moving much faster than they did after Uvalde, Texas, after 9/11, after the Pulse nightclub attack in Orlando, and feel really good about both the generosity of folks who have contributed to this and the compassion that the Mass Violence Fund is bringing to helping support families and the other victims of this attack.
Has the application been finalized, and is it available yet or not?
No, the draft protocol is available, and you can find that on our website. Go to the links at gnof.org, and you'll be able to see information about our steering committee. And it's a local steering committee chaired by our board chair, David Barksdale, and by a former board member, a local lawyer, very prominent in town, named Kim Boyle, and 14 other folks, including a victim of a mass casualty event herself. They took testimony on Monday night and are evaluating that testimony against the protocol that's been released. And again, we'll have a final protocol on February 3rd. We'll use that protocol to build the application so that it can be very efficient. And again, as soon as folks get the information into us, we'll be able to start releasing preliminary payments, partial payments, as we continue to raise money to try to really increase that number that they'll be able to receive at the end of the day.
So is there a website for people that did suffer losses or potential victims to go to and either apply or find out more?
Yes. And so that is New Orleans at survivorsfund.org is an email for any victim to be able to connect with the Mass Violence Survivors Fund. And the Mass Violence Survivors Fund.org is another place, again, where all of the work supporting the victims and their families is being coordinated through. They've got extensive experience working with victims of a tragedy and their families. They've got full compassionate hearts and are experts at this. And I just wanted to note at this meeting the other evening, it's certainly a powerful
meeting. Hang on, Andy. Hang on one second. Yeah. Hang on. You can come back and finish.